Salt is ubiquitous, found on most dining tables, in most kitchens, and in most foods. This common and familiar substance has a long history, has played a major role in shaping civilizations. And here to discuss salt's importance in our health and history are Mark Kalansky, author of Salt, A World History, and Dr. Sonia Angel, Assistant Clinical Professor of Medicine at Columbia Medical Center and Director of the Cardiovascular Disease Prevention and Control at the New York City Health Department. Welcome to today's Please Explain segment.
Thank you.
Hi, Leonard.
Hi, Mark. Welcome back to our show. We invite listener calls, by the way. Our number here is 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Let's begin with you, Sonia, because salt is very familiar with us, but I'm not sure anybody or many of our listeners know just what it is. Is it a naturally occurring mineral?
Sure. So sodium chloride is what makes up salt. And a lot of us think of salt as what's on the table, and that's about it. There are many different types of chemical salts, but the one that that we're talking about today is sodium chloride. And the reason that we're so interested in it from a public health perspective certainly is that sodium in the diet increases blood pressure, which can increase heart attack and stroke.
Well, it also salt is also something that our bodies need. And we'll get to both the positives and the negatives, won't we?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But is a product like Morton's table salt different from the sea salt we're finding these days, not only in gourmet markets but in pretty much every supermarket?
Right. We hear a lot about sea salt. It's become very popular, and it's also sort of raised its profile because there has been a lot of talk about, you know, using sea salt as a way of decreasing your sodium. So a couple of important things. The difference between sea salt and regular table salt, like Morton's, as you mentioned, is that typically the table salt that we buy is iodized. And that's important because it's fortified and therefore helps us keep up our level of iodine, which we certainly need in our diet also. Typically, sea salt does not have that fortification. The big difference, though, is really the way it's where it comes from and how it's processed. So sea salt typically comes from the sea, right? And so when it's produced, it comes with many of the minerals that come from the sea also. So it can be higher in a variety of different minerals than regular table salt has.
Does that make it more nutritional?
Well, so, you know, there's some discussion about that. And actually, if you look through the medical literature, there are no good studies that really compare any of the impacts or outcomes of sea salt compared with regular table salt, suggesting that it is clearly better for you. Certainly because it may be higher in magnesium or potassium, it provides some nutrients that you wouldn't get from table salt. But the main thing is that they both have sodium in them. So ultimately, it's the amount of sodium that you're getting that would be of concern. And so in the end, it's the amount of sodium that's in the sea salt, which is typically quite similar to table salt, that can cause some of the negative effects that we see. And of course, you also mentioned that there is a baseline level of sodium that we need in our diet. It turns out to be very little sodium, but certainly we do need a little bit of sodium in there. So both of them provide that source.
Mark, where did humans first start getting their salt from? Did they mine it, or were they evaporating seawater?
Well, both. But, you know, the thing is that hunter-gatherers don't need salt. I mean, we need salt to live, but hunter-gatherers don't need salt because, you know, if your diet is mostly meat, you get all of the sodium chloride you need. In fact, how we get into trouble is by thinking we need more than that.
When we salt the meat.
When you start getting into an agricultural society, you don't get sodium chloride from grains and vegetables and things. And also, if you raise domestic animals, they need salt. So as soon as people became agricultural societies, they had a need for salt.
Is it mined the same way coal or copper or other minerals are mined?
Pretty much. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in salt mines. I've also spent a lot of time at sea salt places. And sea salt places are all pretty similar, but mines are all completely different.
Well, working in a salt mine was one of the things that we heard was one of those terrible things that could happen to you. Are they awful places?
Well, modern salt mines, for one thing, they light them, which is a big help because it's absolutely black down there without lights. And when they light them, you know, it looks like New York looked a few days ago. You know, it's just all white. It quite beautiful in some mines. You know, all mines are different. There's a mine in Austria where they built slides for workers to get from one level to another, very long slides. They've now closed down the salt production and just use it as a tourist attraction for riding the slides. And a lot of different kinds of mines. There's a mine under Detroit. There's a
salt mine under Detroit?
Yeah, yeah.
There's
a big, huge salt bed from the Great Lakes that spreads all the way across the north of the United States and the south of Canada.
And how are they processed? Is much done to give us these white uniform crystals that we hope will pour when it rains?
Well, a lot of things are done like anti-caking ingredients and you know, as you said, iodine and various industrial things.
Well, iodine was only added later when people were concerned about goiters, weren't they?
Correct, right. But, you know, basically, I was going to say this whole thing about sea salt versus mine salt, a lot of this depends on the purity of the salt because, you know, it's supposed to be just sodium chloride. The thing about sea salt is that a lot of the sea salts that have become very trendy have other stuff in them. If it's not white, it has something else in it.
You know, like pink Himalayan salt and
exactly,
black salt.
Exactly, the gray right. salt of Garonne. These things are usually various kinds of dirt, you know, clay or different things. And some people argue that they're very healthy for you. You know, it used to be, historically, it used to be considered a fault if you couldn't get your salt to be completely white.
But now I assume that those colors also suggest differences in flavor. Sonia, do sea salts automatically have iodine in them?
No, not automatically necessarily, and really also depends how it's processed. So you really have to look at what the composition of it is.
What is kosher salt? Is that mined or is that from sea salt?
Well, it's just large. It's large crystals. It's not that the salt is kosher. It's that it's, I mean, theoretically all salt should be, there's no reason why it wouldn't be kosher, but it's salt that is suitable for kosherizing meat, which is large crystal salt. So it is often sea salt because of, you know, the technology of crystallization is the slower the crystals are formed, the larger they become. So sea salt tends to be larger crystals.
My guests are Mark Kalansky, author of Salt, A World History, among other books. In fact, his most recent is a novel. Dr. Sonia Angel is the director of the Cardiovascular Disease Prevention and Control at New York City Health, New York City's Health Department. And we're talking about salt on today's Please Explain. Later, we'll be taking your calls at 646-829-3985. I'm Leonard Lopate. Salt, you mentioned, Mark, that salt is used in koshering. Now, where you're putting the salt into meat to draw out the blood. So
right.
Salt has all sorts of other capabilities?
Well, yeah. I mean, it. You know, prior to the age of refrigeration and freezing, it was the primary way of preserving food, and it was how, you know, a northern society got through from the end of October till April. You know, salted vegetables and salted meat and salted fish and butter and cheese. You know, cheese was a way of preserving a dairy product so that you could commercialize it and travel with it.
Wasn't salt used as a currency in some parts of the world? Why is it so valuable?
Well, of course, it's lost its value, but it was of tremendous value.
Well, it depends on whether you're buying fleur de sel or not. It can be very expensive.
Right. You know, the word salary comes from the fact, it's a Latin word that comes from the fact that the Romans used to pay their soldiers in salt. The Roman legions, as they went off conquering Europe, always looked for places to produce salt because salt was wealth, and also it was a food supply because you could, you know, preserve food, which is very important for a marching army. And salt was always a value, so rather than have currency, they would just pay soldiers in salt who would then go off and trade it for whatever they needed.
Sonia, salt was linked with fertility and virility at one time. Is there any medical evidence of that?
You know, I think there's some select studies on that, but certainly the preponderance in our interest and concern about salt really is around cardiovascular health.
So let's talk about why salt is necessary for the human body and why it can also be a problem.
Sure. So salt is important because it helps sort of regulate the level of fluid in our body, and you know we're mostly water. And so you need some sodium in there as an electrolyte to help keep everything balanced, and your kidneys actually work pretty well at filtering out salt and water and making sure that that balances well until we start to get too much salt. And so I think it's helpful to understand a little bit about how much is too much and too little and sort of what's relevant. And you know, there are studies that show their populations in this world, the Yanomami Indians in Brazil, for example, who have been studied, get about 200 milligrams of sodium a day. And that's fine, and that's all they need. In fact, you need less than that. You can get on with less than that, but there are populations, whole populations, that live on very low, low levels of sodium. Compare that to the amount that we're getting in the United States on average in the, currently, which is over 3,400 milligrams per day. The recommended limit for most Americans is 1,500 milligrams per day. So right now, most Americans are getting more than twice their recommended daily intake of salt. So you only need a little bit of salt in your body to help it, you know, stay healthy, regulate itself, and yet we're getting this excess amount. And then when you get that excess amount, it makes your body hold on to more fluid. Your kidneys don't filter it in the same way. And ultimately, with that extra fluid, you're increasing your blood pressure. Even a little bit of increased blood pressure, 2-3 millimeters of systolic blood pressure elevated over time, can increase your risk for a heart attack and stroke by from 4 to 6%. Even that little bit, 2 to 3 millimeters. So imagine as you go throughout your whole life with this extra fluid in your body from all that extra salt that you've had, your blood pressure continues to increase. And for many of us, in fact, a third of Americans right now have high blood pressure, hypertension. It's at levels that need treatment. And for those people, salt can be even more problematic.
Well,
so
dehydration. Go ahead, Mark.
Isn't it true that what is too much salt for one person and one set of kidneys is fine for another? Isn't it an individual thing?
Yeah, I mean, everything, pretty much everything in life is an individual thing when you think about it, right? Some people smoke their entire lives. They don't get cancer. They don't have problems breathing. But we do know, and we're very concerned about smoking because we know that it is associated with cancer and very high risk of lung disease. So you're right. There are definitely some people who go through life and may consume just excess amounts of salt. But for the majority of us, we just can't handle that. So when you really think about working at a population level, trying to make the population healthier, what you try to do is think about where do we want kind of everybody to be around to be so that we all sort of live longer, healthier lives ultimately. And when it comes to salt, we all need to be eating about half the amount of salt we're getting.
Well, a listener asks, if you have normal blood pressure, do you have to be as concerned about that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and it comes up really often because I think historically the way people have heard the message is that high salt is bad for people that have heart disease or that have hypertension. But what we do know is that even people with normal blood pressure, high salt in the diet can increase their blood pressure. Maybe not as much, but it will increase it. If you're walking through life, as I mentioned, with that little bit higher blood pressure than you would have had, you're increasing your risk for heart attack and stroke.
Well, let's look at the other side. Is dehydration caused by a lack of salt? Do people living in hot climates or athletes who sweat a lot need to have more salt in their diet than people who live in more temperate and colder areas?
So dehydration as it relates to salt from people who have inadequate salt intake is extremely rare. And I think you mentioned examples of the people who probably need to pay attention not only to salt, but to much of their diet in general. It's those people that do extreme sports, those people that work in extreme weather conditions where, in fact, yes, you are, you know, perspiring at levels that are in excess, and you're pushing your body to very much outside what is normally expected of one's body in today's society. So those people not only need to pay attention probably to salt, but also to their caloric intake, right? So if you're an extreme athlete, you're going to be eating way more calories than we would recommend for your average American. So there are definitely those people, and so a one-size-fits-all is never true, but a one-size recommendation that's generally right for people is what we're really trying to get at with salt. The key thing about regulating your salt intake is not about what we are making individually every single day as decisions about the salt that we eat. The problem about salt is that the vast majority of salt that we're getting in our diet is already in the food when we buy it. So 80% of the salt that we eat every day was already in that packaged food that you bought from the grocery store, from the restaurant food, you know, from what you took home to cook with, it was already in there. It's only about 11% of the total salt we get every day is what we either add when we're cooking or add with the salt shaker. So it's really not what people are consciously doing about the amount of salt that they're getting every day. It's what's already been decided for them, basically, by the people who produce the foods that we're buying every day.
Well, Mark, I guess people didn't realize that in the past because wars
have
been fought.
Well, it wasn't always true.
Well, there were salt taxes, I understand, that were responsible for the French Revolution. It played a role in the American Revolution. Cod, you've written about cod, and, of course, a major part of the Spanish and Portuguese diet involves salted cod. People have valued salt a lot in the past. It's only now that we have been taking in too much, or did they always take in too much and not realize that they were harming their health?
This is an interesting question, and I suspect that they were always taking in too much. In fact, I suspect that in the past, people ate more salt than they eat today because diets used to be extremely salted. I mean, everything was salted. I mean, bacon, the bacon we eat today is just a vague resemblance of what bacon used to be. Butter, I mean, things that were salted were really, really salted. Now they're salted out of tradition, not necessity. When it was the only way of preserving an unrefrigerated food, it was a lot of salt. And while it's true that you were supposed to soak the salt out, I know from societies, for instance, I spend a lot of time with the Basques, who have a very strong tradition of salt cod. They don't even know what fresh cod is. And the entire Basque diet, the famous Basque cuisine, if you have it cooked by a Basque for Basques, a lot of people would be surprised. It's tremendously salted. They have a tremendous taste for salt, and I think that societies, cultures that are centered around these salt foods have very salty palates, and I think that in the past, when all societies were based on these salted foods, that people ate tremendous amounts of salt.
Of course,
they may
people
have been
had,
dropping over from it. We don't know.
Well, people had shorter lifespans in the past.
Right.
Now we're more aware of these things. We've got to take a little break. And when we come back, take some calls from our listeners. Our number is 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guests are Mark Kalansky. Among his books is Salt, A World History. And Dr. Sonia Angel, who is director of the Cardiovascular Disease Prevention and Control at the New York City Health Department. Call in now. As I mentioned, you can leave comments on our show page, but there are other reasons to visit our show page. And one of them is that you can find pictures of guests on our show, like Roseanne Barr. You could find out what Most Deaf's favorite comfort food is. You can watch videos of any number of guests, all on our show page at WNYC.org. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC is supported by the USDAN Center, an arts day camp for children 6 to 18. USDAN offers music, art, theater, dance, writing, chess, video, and organic gardening. Air-conditioned buses from all New York neighborhoods. More at usdan.com. Sony Pictures Classics, presenting Barney's Version, a new comedy starring Paul Giamatti as Barney Panofsky, an ordinary man who lives an extraordinary life and meets the love of his life at his second wedding. Also starring Rosamund Pike, Minnie Driver, and Dustin Hoffman, starts Friday. WNYC gratefully acknowledges the backing of our corporate underwriters and would like to add your business to our diverse list of supporters. To become a WNYC underwriter, contact Executive Director Vincent Gardino at 646-829-4477.
Being right isn't everything. Simple mistakes have given birth to some of music's greatest moments. Today on Soundcheck, a look at the link between human error and musical creativity. That's coming up at 2 and tonight at 10 on 93.9 FM WNYC. And we're back with our Please Explain Look at Salt with Dr. Sonia Angel, Assistant Clinical Professor of Medicine at Columbia Medical Center, and Mark Kolanski, author of, among many books, Salt, A World History, taking your calls at 646-829-3985. And a lot of people have been writing in to our show page with questions, so let me address a few of them. One person wonders about the salt that we put on the streets and sidewalks that after it snowed. He says there has to be something better, right?
Yeah, there is other salts besides sodium chloride. And at the time I was working on the salt book, which was some time ago now, I was told that everybody was going to switch to these, but it hasn't happened. It's actually de-icing. Salt is the largest single use of salt in this country and many other countries. Table salt, salt for eating, is a very tiny percentage of salt produced.
Sonia Bernard in the Bronx asks, does a nasal wash, which is a nasal irrigation routine, affect your salt intake?
Huh. I have never been asked that question before.
Well, that's because you've never been on the show.
I'm so glad I'm here today for that reason. I've certainly never read any studies on this, so that I will start with. I can tell you that I would imagine you could, if you were actually swallowing some of it, you would certainly be consuming some of that salt, and there may be a very little amount that actually gets absorbed across the nasal tissue, but I would suggest that it's certainly not enough to be of health concern.
And Shane in Manhattan wonders, how much does salt or sodium affect someone suffering from osteoporosis?
There are studies that have shown that salt is related to problems with bone metabolism and certainly suggestive that it can contribute to osteoporosis. It has to do with the excretion of calcium from our kidneys when we get a lot of salt in our diet. And that's one of the additional benefits of reducing sodium would be to avoid that process, certainly.
A listener asks, is salt's ability to preserve foods part of the reason processed foods contain so much salt? And why is there so much salt in processed foods and fast foods? Is it a necessary preservative?
There's a simple answer to that. It's not a necessary preservative. The answer is that people really like salt, and they like these foods better if they're salty because people like salty food.
So
there's also a lot of sugar in these mm-hmm. things for the same reason. And salt and sugar is everybody's favorite combination, whether they know it or not.
And we're seeing more and more salt on desserts these days.
And I would add that to that. Mark is absolutely right. I think the thing that's really difficult, one of the most difficult things for us to decrease, reasons it's most difficult for us to decrease salt is because we've gotten used to it and we really like it. And one of the things we notice when a food suddenly has less salt in it is that really abrupt change in flavor and taste. So when you reduce salt in foods, if to continue to have people like them, you need to do it very slowly and gradually over time. When you talk to manufacturers about reducing sodium, though, they will add in also that salt, it also has a role in some of the functionality of producing the product itself. So, for instance, in bread, salt mediates the rate at which the yeast ferments in the bread rises. So it plays a role certainly in the manufacturing process of bread. And so when they reduce salt, they need to think more carefully about that. And in some instances, while it's absolutely true we don't need it for preservatives, we've got refrigerators around, we deliver food, you know, every single day, things can be made fresh daily in this environment that we have. In some cases, like for instance in some of our sausages and meats, salt does still play that role of a preservative, though I would certainly share the sentiment that it's not absolutely necessary as a preservative in our society anymore.
Let's take some calls. Our first caller is Mona from Nyack, New York. Hi, Mona.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Two very quick questions regarding sea salt. It was my understanding that sea salt was healthier for people with blood pressure problems, even though it does contain sodium chloride, because it's counterbalanced by the potassium and the other minerals in it. And also, why doesn't sea salt naturally contain iodine when the sea is full of seaweed and kelp, which I thought had iodine in it?
Go ahead, Sonia.
I can add a response, and I'm sure Mark knows much more about this as well. The health benefits of having potassium are demonstrated and absolutely true. So increased potassium in your diet is very helpful and has been shown to decrease blood pressure also. We strongly encourage increasing potassium in the diet primarily through increasing your fruits and vegetables. Too much potassium can be dangerous for people who have problems with kidney function. So it's not something that you would fortify the food supply with. So if you get a little more potassium from your sea salt, that's fine. But again, it's not going to be the replacement source. It's going to really supplement the levels of potassium to the degree that it counterbalances the really negative effects of the sodium in that product. So strongly encourage increased potassium intake, and fine to have it in sea salt, and great if it's in sea salt at levels that are a little higher, but it's not going to counteract the problem.
Some of the salt substitutes, aren't they mostly potassium?
So potassium chloride is a very common salt that's used. It's another potassium chloride actually is a, quote, salt from a scientific angle. That's the terminology one would use. It is commonly used, and so if you are looking to reduce salt in your diet and you're choosing a salt replacer, read the labels very carefully, and if it's got potassium in it, if it's potassium chloride, then talk to your doctor about it just in case you have some kidney problems that you're not aware of, because you want to be careful with that. But there are other salt replacements, salt substitutes, that don't have potassium in them that are made of other seasonings and can be just as delicious. So I wouldn't discourage people from looking for other alternatives, certainly, to shake on their food.
Anna from Highland Park, New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, good day, everybody. This is a question I think more towards Mark. I work in the salt flats of Cabo Rojo, Puerto Rico. It's where shallow seawater is collected in large acreage and allowed to evaporate for the collection of salt. Is it technically incorrect to call these salt flats salt mines as well, even though they don't involve holes in the ground?
Well, yeah, I mean, traditionally they're not called salt mines. It's called a salt bed or sea salt works are not, they aren't mines. They're, you know, collecting basins. I don't think anything bad will happen to you if you want to call it a mine, but technically it's not a mine.
So technically if it's in the ground or...
Yeah, if you go digging for it in the earth, it's as opposed to evaporating it from seawater.
Thank you for your call. We go now to Marjorie from Babylon, Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My husband has a low blood level of sodium. It's gone down as low as 129, and he started using a lot of salt because he wanted to get it up. They almost canceled the surgery that he was to have because the anesthesiologist didn't want to operate on someone with such a low blood level of sodium. I don't know exactly what to do. I mean, normal would be 135 up. His is only 129. And it's gone up a little bit recently, but I
should he have more salt? Is that the question?
Yeah, should he be using more salt, or what should he be doing?
Sonia?
So what you're describing is not a common situation at all. And as a physician, figuring out the reason for low sodium requires doing some testing and knowing a lot about the history of the person. The first thing we certainly look for are, you know, medications that people are taking and other diseases that they might have of the kidneys. And often one of the first things one thinks about if it's a brand new condition is that person suddenly drinking much more water. So it can be very variable, and it's the kind of thing you really need a doctor to look at closely. I wouldn't say that the first solution would be to eat more salt, because you don't really know what the problem is, if it's that he has too much water in there or not enough salt. They both give you low sodium concentration, right? So it's something you really want to work with your doctor on.
We earlier heard that we get all the salt we need probably from meat that we eat. What about for vegetarians? Steve from New Jersey eats no processed food, he eats no meat. He wonders whether he should be adding salt to stuff.
This is an interesting question, you know, because as far as I know, if you only eat vegetables, you do have a salt shortage problem. And yet there are many people like your caller that don't seem to have a problem. I would point out that people who I've interviewed people who have had salt shortage problems, and you're not really aware of what's happening. It can get quite serious. You could eventually die from it. It was a big problem for American soldiers in the Pacific during World War II, and they would get very sick, and the doctors would look at them and say, well, it's a salt shortage, and give them salt pills, and they would be amazed. It's not like not having enough water and you feel thirsty. Nothing in your body says, yes, it's the salt that I'm lacking.
Well, Sonia, you said earlier that 1,500 milligrams is what we probably should be taking in. How much is that? Is that a teaspoon, a tablespoon?
Yeah, it's under a teaspoon. So 2,300 milligrams is about a teaspoon. 1,500 milligrams is just under a teaspoon, about two-thirds of a teaspoon. It's, again, remember, though, that the majority of it is already in the food. So, you know, what you're shaking out of the salt shaker shouldn't equal that amount, because you probably got 80% of that already.
There are a lot of superstitions about salt. Where do they come from? Beyond the expression, not worth his salt, why do we throw salt over our shoulder, for example?
Well, a lot of the superstitions and religious beliefs, too, that are connected with salt have to do with salt's function in preserving things. So, for example, in both Islam and Judaism, there is this belief in salt sealing bargains. Some Jews will eat salt after saying the blessings on Shabbat night because it's, you know, it's a covenant with God, and you seal the covenant by taking some salt. A lot of things have to do with preservation. The tradition in Japanese theater of sprinkling the stage with salt to keep away bad spirits, the belief in Haitian voodoo that salt will break the spell on a zombie.
That's not true?
Well, in all honesty, I keep my zombies the way they are, so I don't know.
I'm already writing a book about it, another novel. Angela from Manhattan asks if muscle cramps have anything to do with salt intake, Sonia.
Muscle cramps can be a tough one, and typically they don't have much to do with salt. Again, unless you're doing extreme sports and your electrolytes are all thrown out of balance after you throw a marathon or something. So it's typically not associated with salt.
We go now to Grace from Jersey City. Hi, you're on the air. Grace?
Yes, hello.
Go ahead.
My question is, why are we not discussing the differences between refined and unrefined salts?
Because we were waiting for you to call.
Thank you. Well, here I am.
Okay. Are there big differences between refined and unrefined salt? Ultimately for our health, Sonia?
Again, when it comes right down to it, it's the sodium, the amount of sodium that you're getting per day. You'd have to look at what's actually in the unrefined salt itself. One of the things to keep in mind, too, is that the flavor that you get, the taste that you get, that salty taste, is about when the crystal of salt touches the tongue. And so even a small, very refined crystal of salt can give you a really strong burst of tasty salt flavor. If you're using these big chunky salts that you're sort of doing, using the salt mill to get out, you're ending up with some very large crystals of salt on your food, and you're getting comparatively less flavor for that amount of sodium that you're getting because there's less surface area on that crystal. So I would suggest that in terms of, like, in general, being able to keep lower levels of salt and still enjoy the salty flavor, if that salty flavor, with respect to the salt that you're adding at the table, a more refined, smaller grain of salt will give you more flavor with a less amount of sodium.
Just
yeah,
one
but
more
it won't
thing.
Give you that crunch.
One more
true.
Thing. Why do we use salt?
Crunch.
Why do people use salt in making ice cream? Is it because it melts the ice quickly?
Yeah,
I can't answer that one.
It's actually the same. It's the same reason that it's used in roads, that it lowers, or is it raises? You see, you're talking to a real chemist.
Well,
here.
We have to
the
end it there. Well, whatever it does
point.
Is it makes it melt, and and in the melting, it creates more coldness. Mark Kalansky is author of Salt, World History. Dr. Sonia Angel is assistant clinical professor of medicine at Columbia Medical Center and director of the Cardiovascular Disease Prevention and Control of the New York City Health Department. I want to thank both of you for being on today's Please Explain segment.
Thank
My
you.
Pleasure.
It's a pleasure.